I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, and I work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer online one-on-one sessions, packages, and online courses for the conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me, and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Asabia. Asabia is one of Sweden's most famous midwives, as well as an author, podcaster, and influencer. She is a mama of two children outside and one cooking away inside her womb right now. And today she will share her takeaways from her first medicalized hospital birth and why she chose to have a home birth for her second, as well as sharing all the amazing details of her home birth and her pearls of wisdom about birth, both in the hospital system and at home from a mama and a midwife's perspective. It was such an honor having Asabia on, and I am sure you'll find her story filled with birthing wisdom. Curious about Asabia? Find her on Instagram as Asabia. Are you planning on having a home birth? Then you can download my free home birth checklist that I give to all my mamas who's having a home birth. In it, I share how to prepare the birth space and what you need to source for a home birth. I share the best labor stations and nourishment and midwifery insider tips on what will make a world of difference during your labor and birth. Find the link to the download in the show notes. This episode is sponsored by Informed Pregnancy Plus, a brand new pregnancy and postpartum streaming platform featuring Ricky Lake's amazing documentary, The Business of Being Born, the juicy documentary, Orgasmic Birth, as well as informative and uplifting films about breech births and vaginal births after cesareans, just to name a few. You can also access meditation, yoga, and invigorating workouts designed for pregnant and postpartum mamas. I highly, highly recommend this streaming platform to all my mamas, as well as birth workers out there. I recommend Informed Pregnancy Plus to all my mentees in my mentorship program because there are brilliant resources in there. And the best news is that you can try Informed Pregnancy Plus absolutely free of charge. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv and start watching these inspiring documentaries and films already today. Welcome, Asabia, to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm excited to talk to you.
so excited to have you here. I just first want to thank you for the amazing work that you're doing here in Sweden, spreading some beautiful information to the public about your home birth and just generally about birth and birth more so as like a rite of passage and something that is more than just a medical event in hospitals. So thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you. I feel very blessed with my platform that I've been given and being able to spread the word. Thank you.
Oh, so amazing. So epic. If anyone who's listening can understand Swedish, then you should go and listen to Asabia's talk on a radio show that was on national radio this summer, talking about her home birth and also your hospital birth. And today, obviously, we're going to dive on into your natural home birth. But we're going to start so you're a midwife. For anyone who doesn't know that, obviously, here I am just chatting away, forgetting to mention that you're a midwife.
I'm a midwife, yeah.
Yes. And that the first time you were pregnant, you chose to have a hospital birth. And with your second, you decided to have a home birth. So let's just kind of start where, you know, from the beginning, you know, being a midwife, getting pregnant, deciding to have a hospital birth, and just kind of summarizing how that was for you and the takeaways that made you decide to have a home birth for your second.
Mm-hmm. So I got pregnant with my first child during my midwifery studies. And I think if you would have asked me before studying to be a midwife about home birth, I'm sure I didn't know anything about it. I don't really remember, but I think my thought was that this is something that like weirdo people, I don't know, like that was so foreign to me, that concept, you know, as it is for many people. But it was in my midwifery studies that I heard about it for the first time through my teachers. Quite a few of them had either been home birth midwives, which isn't that common here in Sweden, or had given birth at home. It wasn't like it wasn't given a lot of space in the studies, but they at least mentioned it. And that's where I, like, the idea maybe first appeared to me, because this was women that I, you know, could relate to, that I felt seemed sensible. And it didn't become as foreign to me when I heard about them doing it. But I don't think I ever thought about giving birth at home with my first. Also, maybe I didn't even know that was allowed. I'm sure I didn't even know that was allowed. I thought that I still had it. I mean, I've learned a lot during these past few years about what's allowed and not allowed. But I also felt like I was, I felt safest in the hospital. But I had a normal pregnancy, everything went well. I decided to give birth at the last place that I had my, what's it called, like practicals, where I did my, I'd been there at the end of my midwifery study. So I also knew a few of the midwives working there, and I felt very comfortable there. But my first birth, it was like, I guess it's a classic first time birth, but maybe I made it a bit harder than it had to be. I was prompted to, I don't want to say prompted to, my midwife was very respectful, but she asked me if I wanted to do an ultrasound to check the baby's growth, because my uterus wasn't growing as really, it wasn't alarming in any way, but it was, you know, it should have been bigger. I'm trying my English words. So I did that, and then at that ultrasound they thought instead of saying he was too small, he was apparently a bit too big.
Oh, isn't that funny?
yeah, it was very ironic. And then even though I had the concept of like, if you know, I'm my body is able to birth my baby, whichever size. And, you know, it's made for this. It was hard for me to actually believe that for myself, even if I would say that to other people. And it really put something, it kind of stressed me out, him being bigger. And that's what prompted a whole thing about induction. And I did several sweeps, and I think that's one of the reasons that I had quite a long, you know, irregular, quite painful contractions at home, and I was really tired, and that it just started a cycle of, you know, interventions and things like that. But all in all, what I really remember from that birth was that I could not fully relax at home. So it wasn't, not that I'm not relaxed in my home, but I remember such a huge difference when I was sent back from the hospital twice. And then I believe the third time I was like, you can't send me back because I can't do it. I just want to be where I'm going to be, basically.
Yeah.
So they you can stay up for the night and sleep here. And I got some sleeping pills and some pain relief. And they were like, in the morning, they said that I had to go for a 2-hour walk. When I come back, if I'm not open 4 centimeters, I have to go home. So it's kind of stressful in itself.
Yeah.
So we went for that walk, and I was like, I need to do this. And I managed, or whatever.
You passed the test of being enough dilated to be able to stay. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? Especially for first-time mama, it's like you can have a long, like that early labor phase or the latent phase or whatever. But it's like, because you need to be in the place where you feel safe to let go. And if you have this constant anxiety, will I be allowed in? Am I open enough? Like, you won't open with that anxiety and worry. It also, it just prolongs that separation phase before you get into liminality and the active phase.
Yeah. For me, that was so obvious, because when they said that you can stay, I remember it very vividly. And my husband was in the bathroom, and it was like something physically happened in my body. And I was like, because I'd been trying to relax. I knew that I need to try to breathe and, you know, shoulders down and everything. But it was a big difference between what I was doing, you know, trying to relax, but being quite tense and nervous, and actually like letting it happen and being making my body soft and being relaxed for real. And it was like, it made such a huge difference in what I was feeling as well. I was like, okay, so this is, it's still intense, but it's, you know, 50 times easier when I'm just letting it happen. And that happened when I really believed that was because they said I can stay, and I was in the place I was going to be. I knew I wasn't going home. I wasn't, yeah. And that's probably where I first, not that I thought of it at that moment, but that's one of the reasons that I felt that I'm not doing the back and forth again. I would like to be where I'm giving birth when it starts.
Yeah.
And my birth was, I mean, I was privileged enough to know, as I said, some of the midwives. I could choose my midwife. That probably helped everything. But another key moment for me was, I felt like I was handling it really well. I was in the bath. I felt like I really was managing, but then I was 6 centimeters longer than they would have wanted me to be, six centimeters. And if this would have been today, I would have just said that we can wait, but I didn't have that in me, that confidence in me at that time. And then they said that I had to get out of the bath, which made everything a lot harder for me. And I needed some oxytocin drop, like a...
Synthetic oxytocin.
Yeah. And that kind of, that caused some fear in me, because I felt like I can manage, I'm managing, but I cannot do any more. If they add something, that I was afraid of.
Yeah.
And so I asked for an epidural, which was okay for me, but I would have been curious to see how it would have been if I could have just gotten a bit more time.
It's all about the time, isn't it? Because this is the problem where there's a time limit and you need to open this much in a certain amount of time, which is not true. There is no time limit in labor and birth. As long as the mom and the baby's fine, there's no time limit. But this is a major problem, isn't it, in the medical establishment that is maternity care.
And the only reason they know that I'm like too slow is all these vaginal exams. That's just another thing. I was like, I don't want to do that. I would like to not do the vaginal exams if I don't need to. So all in all, I had a good, I had a fine birthing experience. It was not in any way for me traumatic. I also felt very well prepared in the sense that I felt comfortable, like in the hospital setting. I knew what they were doing. I knew what I was consenting to. I'm very happy about that. I knew the value of having my support system. I had my sister there, I had my husband there, and they were also well prepared. So that made it it was a good experience in that way. And it was like fine. It was fine. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't my most empowering or amazing experience. It was fine. And I learned a lot from that birth. And I was able to birth him vaginally, which I wanted. And I, it was okay. But I pretty quick, I got pregnant again after 1.5 years. And I don't really, my memory isn't the best, but I don't remember thinking about home birth before that. But when I got pregnant, it was like one of the first things I thought about, that I get another shot at this and I get to do it a bit differently.
Where did you find out you were pregnant?
In Ghana, because we were in...
I remember this. It was like, was this when she was sitting on the toilet in Ghana? Yes, tell us the story of that, because I remember listening to you sharing that on the radio.
Yeah, we ended my son's my maternity leave with going to Ghana, where my mom is from. So we were going to be there for 3 months. I think I got pregnant day two or something like that, because it was a long 3 months for me, because I was quite nauseous and the food that I usually love, I didn't love anymore. But I found that out when we were there, and it was unplanned. Whilst my first pregnancy was very planned, meticulously, and which was a gift in itself, I feel like. It was a nice, my husband was really shocked, but I was quite happy about it. I was ready for a second one. And quite quickly, I was like, okay, I'm going to have a home birth. I contacted my midwives. No, I was probably like 3 weeks pregnant, but I was like, I need to get them to book them. And I'm really happy about that, because then the pandemic came and a lot of people wanted to give birth at home. And so I was happy that I remember my midwife, she said no, she didn't have time. But then because of the pandemic, she couldn't go on her Europe trip that she was going to go on. So she was like, okay, I can do it. So that I was quite happy about that. Too bad for her, but what should I say about that? I was just, as I said, what my first birth had taught me was that I'm quite sensitive, maybe more than I thought, to, for one, people's energies and who I have there. And I just felt that I can't do the meeting lots of random people while trying to focus on giving birth. Also, I really wanted a undisturbed birth. I wanted to try to see if I can do this without, just by myself, without anyone. I really felt like I want to just do it by myself. And But not by myself. I wanted my midwives there, and I wanted them to be close. I wanted my family there. I definitely wasn't alone. We were lots of people, but I just wanted it to be people that really trusted me and trusted birth, and just to be able to do my own thing.
I love that.
So after getting my midwives there, I guess I told my husband that this is what's going down. Or I asked him. I don't know. I probably told him, but he trusts me. But he was a bit, as many men are, I believe, or partners are, a bit skeptical and, you know, worried. What if? And but he and my sister went to a meeting with two very experienced home birth midwives that they used to have them before the pandemic, where they informed, you know, people who were interested about what happens and what it entails. And after that, he was totally on board, which was really nice for me.
Love that.
Yeah. And I asked to have a friend of mine as well. I asked one experienced midwife, but I also asked a friend that's a midwife that I just like and trust a lot to be my second midwife, and that I'm really happy about. And that my both my sisters were there, and a friend of mine who hasn't been pregnant yet, and I just wanted her to experience birth this way before having given birth. I wish I would have seen something different before giving birth myself. So I felt like that was a nice gift for her.
I love that. That's such a gift for people. What a generous soul you are to invite all these people to witness your birth.
Yeah, but I'm a family girl as well. So I really enjoyed having them there. But this time I've also asked a friend of mine who's studying midwifery. I just feel like that it's even more important for her to be able to see something else before she will start practicing at the beginning of next year. So I just...
So important.
Once you see, you can't unsee, as you say.
That's it. When you experience a home birth, whether as just a witness or as a midwife, your world will always be changed. Yeah. And I actually, as a student midwife, my first year, I had the privilege that in the first 24 hours of experienced birth, I had my first ever was a shoulder dystocia in the hospital. And 24 hours later, I attended a home birth that was in the water. Both first-time mothers, and both just so extremely different in just management and how the midwives were, and of course, their experience too.
How lucky you are. Was that a part of your education, or you
So I was very lucky that I was living in an area in Australia where 25% of women have home births, and about 90% have physiological births in a birth center. Only a few percent go to actually the normal tertiary hospital and have that kind of experience. So and my education was direct entry midwife, so I had 3 years just as, you know, straight into midwifery, and was doing prac in hospitals for those 3 years, as well as following birth center midwives and home birth midwives, and doing 30 families that I followed. Most of them had home births or birth center births. So I followed the whole physiological process of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum.
Wow.
Very different.
That would be so extremely beneficial for a lot of people, because I think you doing it the way you've done it, that's maybe the ultimate way to learn to see all the different. I don't know if it's good to be whichever part of birth it is, to just see one kind, because you can get quite blind to this being the only way. But that I'm jealous of you. I would love to experience birth centers as well. I don't know if we'll ever get that in Sweden.
Well, maybe, Flavia, it's you and I and some other midwives, we're supposed to do that birth center.
Maybe. When I have energy.
After this baby, which is your third now that you're carrying. Yeah. In a few years, I'll call on you.
That would be lovely. But what else? Should I say, like, the whole what happened, or what should I say?
Of course, we're going to dive on into that story now. Of course we will. So I would like you to go back to, you know, being heavily pregnant, and, you know, did you have any signs of labor approaching for you at all? Or did it just start with a bang this time?
I love that I have so many pictures, and I've also written diaries of this, because otherwise I would have never remembered or or seen the signs, because I've seen them kind of in hindsight. But being heavily pregnant, for one thing, I'd been so calm the entire pregnancy. I was very confident in my choices and I felt confident about everything. But then, and also I was determined to not become fixated with my due date, which I kind of was with my first. And, you know, the feeling of when it passes, it's just like a ticking bomb. I really didn't want to do that. So I tried not even telling people when the date was and being quite vague about it. But then, anyway, when the date came and when it passed and when it had been 2 days after, I kind of had a breakdown situation, which I believe was the start of birth, or what me being able to break down and cry and feeling very vulnerable and talking about my worries and crying so much. The day before it started, I cried so much, and I hadn't cried for a very long time because I was didn't have much to cry about. But I think I had to
release the tears, release it. The waters. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that was the beginning of opening up and starting this whole process. So that's the more subtle way it started. But then in that evening, so that whole day, I remember starting it quite, I actually remember why I cried. The first thing that made me cry that morning, because my husband said his sister, who was pregnant at the same time as me, but she was due 3 weeks later, he said she had given birth, which is great, right? But for me, it was like, you're kidding. Everyone has given birth, but I haven't. And, you know, I'm never going to give birth. And, you know, you're totally irrational. And that made me cry so bad. And then everything kind of spiraled and I lost my confidence. And I talked to, I hugged my husband and he comforted me. And then I talked to both my sisters and they also, you know, it reassured me that this, everything is as it should be and I have prepared and it's going to go well. And I remember also talking to my mother when I feel a bit vulnerable and I just hear my mother's voice, it's just, it can make me cry just the thought of her voice, because it's just, you know, I become like a child again somehow, which is quite nice. So with her, I cried so much. So I felt good. But then I'd already booked a time to speak with my midwife earlier in the day. And I was like, I don't really need it now because I'm feeling better. But then after I'd spoken to her, she really helped me get my confidence back. And I felt like, I'm ready to do this. And then later on in the evening, I felt something. I was like, this is different. It's some major pain, which is a bit different. Because I remember I texted my friend, the friend that I'd invited to see the birth. I also wanted her to take some pictures. So I'd said to her, maybe something is happening, but it could be weeks. That's what I wrote. But then in the evening of that evening, I think it was around 2-3 o'clock at night, my son, who was 2 at the time, he was still breastfeeding in the daytime. So my son, he had stopped breastfeeding in the nighttime, but then he asked me to breastfeed. And I guess I was too tired to say no. Usually I said no because we'd stopped at night for quite some time. But then when he was breastfeeding, then I felt, because, you know, you can get some mild, you know, contractions. Is that a good word? Like, you can feel uterus
contracting for sure from the oxytocin that's released the breastfeeding.
Exactly. And I'd been feeling that through pregnancy, but this was different. This was quite intense. And I kind of kept going till he fell asleep. And I realized, and I rolled away, and I realized it's not stopping. It's coming quite often. And I don't remember. I think I also had this memory from my first birth of, for one, it taking a long time, even though I know it can be quicker the second time, and that's not uncommon. But also that I had like a, in the back of my mind, I kind of need oxytocin for it to, not that this was an active thought, but I think that's something that stuck in my mind, that can I really, can my body really do this without any outside help?
I mean, so, you and I both know that we're so impressionable, especially when we're birthing a baby. So whatever was said to you in that first birth, it stays with you. If it's not like in the conscious mind, it's in the subconscious. It's so strong. And I don't know how many women I work with who have the same things that they carry from their first births, these things that they were told, especially the whole failure to progress, or labor stalling, or my womb not working, or my vagina not opening, and all of this. That's mostly not true.
Yeah. So I think that's one reason where I dared not think this is actually happening and it's actually not going to stop and it's, you know, not some kind of fake labor. But if I would have been more in tune, I would have realized it, because it was quite intense. It was quite frequent. But I felt drawn to the bath. I said that I cannot sleep through this, but let me run a bath. And I remember being struck by it being so frequent, because with every little thing I was doing, I got a contraction in between. Like I wanted to get some candles out. Getting a candle, you know, I had to stop. Getting my matches, I had to stop. And I was like, okay, this is quite intense. But then I had a plan not to time my contractions. I'm not much for the apps that time, because isn't that just a very funny symbolism of how we view birth, that mm-hmm. we need an app to tell us when it's, you know, a good time to go. But still, I guess because of some of my, you know, worries in my subconscious, I was like, let me see how often this is happening. So I had a timer of some kind. And it was like, you are in active labor, go to the hospital. I was like, okay. So I went in my bath instead, and I told my people that we're going to, I didn't contact my midwife. So I was like, this is, who knows? It can be weeks, you know? I dare not think this is actually going quickly. But I called my friend and my sisters, and I told my mother as well, because she was gonna watch my son. And laid in the bath, and in the bath it was lovely. I could really rest and close my eyes. Oh, I told my husband as well. But an annoying thing was that I woke my husband. He was in the other room, and I was like, something has happened. I'm going to lay in the bath, but have your phone close to you because you need to open the door if someone comes, because I don't want to open. And he was like, yeah. Obviously, he was sleeping because he wasn't listening to me, because when I tried to call him, telling him to open the door down there, he wouldn't answer because he fell asleep. So I had to go get out of the bath, and I was like, I didn't love that because he's a heavy sleeper anyway. So I woke him properly, and he was like, what's going on? And people came. But at this point, I was deep in myself, which was, if I look back at the whole experience, I'd say I'm not at all a stressed person, but I do have a hard time sometimes calming my mind down and just being, or just doing one thing at a time. That's not my, that's not the easiest thing for me, but that was pretty cool to experience, you know, being in a state that I wasn't doing anything else and just being in my body and focusing and being in this altered state of mind.
This is for all my mamas out there. Did you know I have a signature childbirth education course called the Natural Birth Course, which is designed to help assist you in optimizing your chances of having a natural, physiological, and sovereign birth of your baby? If you see childbirth as a rite of passage like me and not as a medical event, and you want to feel fully prepared physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually for your birth, then the Natural Birth Course is for you. Included is over 40 bite-sized video lessons with me, sharing all my knowledge about birth, your body, and your amazing womb. I share fear releases, meditations, natural birth video playlists, checklists, and guides to optimize your physiology and for you to have a sovereign and empowering birth experience 24/7 from the comfort of your own home. There are different payment plans to suit everyone's wallet and needs, and you can find out all about it at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
It didn't take long from that first contraction till he was out. It was about 4 hours, but I felt like it was I think about this. Who knows what it maybe would have taken longer if I had gone to hospital, but I'm sure that maybe I'd given birth, 20 minutes after or something like that. And then I would have just felt like, why am I even here having to do that car ride and everything. So I was so happy not having to do that. And it was just felt so great. I'm not going anywhere. I felt how I could really relax. The people just came to me and everyone knew what I wanted and kept their calm. And it was just, I heard some faint voices saying, some comforting words or them talking to each other and someone touching me sometimes, giving me a drink. But I was really in my mind, in my own head. And it was I'd done hypnobirthing before to prepare and had visualized my birth every night for the past few weeks and, doing my affirmations which I really enjoyed doing, but I didn't realize how much it would help me during the birth process. I felt like maybe the visualization would have come by itself, but it came so quickly and so vividly to me, as well as the affirmations. They were almost, it was like another voice was reading it to me. It was almost like it was like a fourth sister's voice. That's the way that I would explain it as. So I felt like I was really in this hypnotic state of deep, deep, deep relaxation, where I also saw myself floating on water and also climbing a mountain. And the mountain was Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. That was what it was in my mind. And I remember with every contraction, I climbed the mountain and I stood on top of the mountain during its peak, and I screamed like a Swedish story, Ronja Rövardotter, where she screams her spring scream. That's the energy kind of that I felt, like I was just screaming out everything. But to everyone around me, I was just still and had my eyes closed, but inside of me I was just like letting it all out, and that felt really good. And I just felt, I mean, I wouldn't say it was easy and it wasn't pain-free, but it was definitely manageable. So when I, at one point, felt something, by this time I had said to the midwives to come, but they had about 40 minutes there. But then I felt something that I hadn't felt with my first child, which was the sensation to push, or not since, like it just, my body just pushed kind of for me. And I was like, what is I was still in my mind. I was like, no, this cannot be. It's too early. That's how I kind of, I was like, I must be pushing early, too early, because it's been so quick and relatively easy.
How quick are we talking? Like, how many hours have you been in labor at this point?
3, maybe.
Right.
I think the first, that first sensation, that was about an hour before.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty quick, kind of.
So quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that it was, as I said, it was intense, and I needed all my focus, but I had all my focus, and
and you were amongst people who loved you and that were there for you, so you could really trust the process and yourself and lean into the sensations like you did with your visualizations. It makes sense to me. And yeah, that's also,
really makes sense to me as well.
Now,
It's also so interesting how still I couldn't believe it, because it was, as you said, we're affected by what has happened to us, what has been said to us, if not in my conscious mind, but in my subconscious. So I felt very, very relaxed and, you know, confident in a way, but not, I didn't have all the trust that this could actually be happening this easily, quote unquote easily. So that at that point, I remember I felt with 2 fingers, and I felt like it to see if it's really, is this happening? And I felt a bag of waters quite close to my vaginal opening. But even then, I was like, is this really, am I feeling correctly? I was like, okay, maybe it's happening. And it was very cool feeling the sensation of what I've seen other people do it, or and also describing this like uncontrolled just movement in the body where you just like, you know, just happens. I'd really long to feel that feeling, because when with the epidural I didn't have that sensation at all, so that was really that gave me quite a lot of energy. And after a few of those pushes, my water broke, and I remember looking down and seeing that the water was clear, which made me happy, because I was like, okay, there won't be any talk about us having to go anywhere or someone saying something about, I don't know. I just wanted everything to be as normal as possible. So that was like a relief for me. And just when that happened, my midwives came through the door. They came in and said hi, and they saw my husband and my sister in the living room, you know, fiddling with the pool, birth pool, because that was still the plan, that I was going to give birth in the pool. I just bought a bathtub like a month before, not with a plan to give birth there. I don't know why, but I just thought it would be too small. But then I remember my midwife coming in and saying that, is it okay if we skip the pool? Because I think there won't be time for the pool. And that was that confirmation for me that she also believed that this is actually soon over, kind of. And I think that's also for the rest of the people there, they understood that, okay, we're kind of soon at the finale. But my son was still home at this point, and he took everything really well, that there were lots of people there, and he's kind of a, you know, he likes his mother being close to me, and I would have thought that he would be more concerned about where I was or what I was doing, but I believe children have a strong intuition, and he understood that there's something going on that he didn't ask for me really, and he wasn't sad at all, and he was totally okay with my mom leaving to go to daycare with him. She had never left him at daycare before ever, and yeah, I was just a bit surprised, but at the same time not surprised, because I'm sure somewhere he knew what was going on. And when he had left, my older sister came in and told me that he left, and he was in such a good mood, and just saying that he was really happy. And I think that, I don't know if it made me cry, but it made me very emotional and very happy. And I could feel like an extra wave of relief and just this feeling of, okay, now I can do it, last part. And about 20 minutes later, he was born. So I think I just needed to, I didn't needed him to know that he was happy and safe and taken care of. And then everyone was there, and I pushed a bit on my own. You know, when the midwife came, she asked if she could check the heart rate or if I wanted her to. She didn't ask to examine me, but I asked her to. And now afterwards, she was like, if I knew that you had already felt what you had felt, I would have said, I don't need to do it. And she would have, you know, tried to boost my confidence instead. But at that point, I couldn't really trust myself. I wanted her confirmation. Mm. And she confirmed that, yeah, I felt what I'd felt. And
did you stay in the bath while she did that?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Oh, thank God. No, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but you know, like in hospital, most windbags people are like, oh, you have to go and lie on the bed now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, that would just ruin my whole focus. Mm-hmm. It's so sensitive, the whole experience, and it's so many things. I feel that way every time if I'm at a home birth. I think of there's so many points where it's like, okay, now this would have happened. Now she would have been asked to move. Now she would have been examined. Now they would have been worried because of this. It's like so many things that are viewed as
abnormal,
but abnormal,
it's just a variation of normal. Like, we're all so different. Like, each birth, each woman, each baby. I would say most births I've been to outside of the into hospital too, but like, I would go the same. Like, this would never have been allowed in quotation marks in the hospital. You know, women going too long in the early stage or in the active stage or in the transition or in the, you know, second of birthing. Oh, too long now. And no, there's no such thing.
There's no such thing. And I just feel it would have been cool to see like a sliding doors moment. What would have happened if I had made another choice and chosen? It would be exactly the same baby, exactly the same, you know, my body, but then I would have chosen to go somewhere else, meet other people, be in another place. I definitely wouldn't be the same thing. And that's what I can be a bit frustrated about sometimes when people are like, if I would have given birth at home, this and this would have happened, because that's what happened at the hospital. And I'm so thankful that I was at the hospital. But you know, it's a sensitive subject because you don't want to blame anyone for what has happened. But what we do know is that things that happen around you during birth, it really affects the process and how you experience the process. So you can't just take one birth and then place it somewhere else and say it's going to be the same.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And, you know, I know you're much more, you know, kind in your way of speaking around things than I am. I'm a bit more of a rebel, and I tell
you a bit
as it is. And you know, I say that, you know, it's almost impossible to have a natural physiological birth in the hospital, because the hospital is a place you go to have a medicalized birth. It's a place you go to hand over your birth and they will manage it for you. And that's kind of how it's built. It's very hard to do something different there. It will be most people in that system will not be comfortable with you telling them, I want to have absolutely no intervention. I want to have it almost like a home birth in hospital. That, you know, that is a big, much bigger ask to do in that kind of institution that's not geared for that. They're amazing at surgery and at epidurals and at, you know, medicalized birth, but not in physiology and not in upholding physiology. It's not meant for it. So to achieve
that. They don't know it.
No, they've never seen it, almost. Barely. Yeah.
So those people who, your biggest chance of giving birth physiologically in the hospital, at least in Sweden, is if you get there in the last minute, like you were there really short time, then maybe But otherwise, the longer you're there, the longer, you know, the less likely you are, definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, and the problem is, like we just spoke about with your first labor and birthright, is that especially with the first time mom, but not always, it can be whatever baby you're having. And for some women, well, for most women, you need to be in the place you're going to birth your baby to fully let go into labor and birthright. And so we're hindering the physiology by saying, oh, you can't come in yet. You're too early. And so women stay in that limbo land, which, you know, is making that draw out that phase, right? Whereas for you, you know, again, like what would have happened with the second baby had you known you'd had to move at some point? Would you be able to have gone into such a depth of relaxation and trust in your
home? I mean, it would have been impossible, because then I also have to like organize, just organizing things, people, someone getting my son, doing, calling, hoping to get in the place I want to get in, knowing that I'm going to meet, who am I going to meet? That's also such a huge thing. So it would have definitely been different. I'm so happy that I got it this way. I'm really happy that I made that decision. But
so you're back in the tub and you're having involuntary pushing, and the midwife said, yep, all good, like you were right all along. What happens then?
I remember my midwife saying that, you know, try not to push so hard, or like try to breathe through it. And in one sense, that was kind of nice to hear, just because I was like, okay, that means she feels like it's really close. But in another sense, I really felt that I'm not, I need to do this the way I'm doing it. I told her as well, I was like, I'm gonna push. I will be doing that, because it felt so good as well. It was really, I didn't push, like, it just followed my body, and I felt like it also, it took away a lot of the pain, and it was another type of sensation, and it felt really good. But I remember that vividly, saying like, I'm gonna do it anyway. And she was like, okay, to it. And I remember also her saying, you know, remember, you can feel the baby. And I wanted to feel him when he was coming out, but I didn't think I had thought of feeling him when he was like quite a bit way up. So I had my fingers on his head like for at least that last half hour, and that gave me a lot of sense of strength and control, also feeling that it's actually, we're doing this together for one, and also that it's something is happening, it's moving forward, and I'm following along with what's happening. That was, I'm really happy that she reminded me to do that, because that really helped me in my motivation as well, because it was still definitely manageable, but you know, the closer, I didn't have the real transition stage kind of when feeling that, oh, I can't do this. And I had one of those moments, but I have it on film, so I know it was 5 minutes before he was out. That's when the first time that I said, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. When is he gonna come out? And, you know, and I was like asking my midwife, is it soon? She's like, yes, it's soon. You know, it's soon. You don't have to, but sometimes you just want other people to say
it. That's the thing. Like, even though you're a midwife, like you're a birthing woman, and a birthing woman is not in her neocortex. She's the woman birthing a baby. It doesn't matter all that you know, because you're not your logical mind. And I love that you can say this, because, you know, it's so important for everyone to hear. Like, it doesn't matter all the knowledge you have. When you're a birthing woman, that is what you are.
Yeah.
You're not.
The same with being a new mother, I feel like when I had my first child, okay, I'd shown breastfeeding, showed this and that to everyone. But then when it was me with my baby, suddenly I'm just a, you know, very new, fresh, worried mother.
Yeah.
Not a midwife. Yeah. But I remember that moment, and I love that I have it on film, on camera, because I don't, all of the, this whole birth, I don't know how I would have, I remember what was in my mind, but I love being able to see it from the outside and seeing what other people viewed and seeing that moment that I had where I was kind of gave up for a while and people just boosting my confidence. And I had that moment, but then I was like, obviously it's just me doing this. No one is going to do it for me. I have to just finish.
I think it's an important rite of passage too, like a part of the rite of passage, like getting to that point, whatever that is, a few minutes, hours for some women, where you do then get to the, almost like you hit rock bottom, and that's where you like bounce yourself up. And like, that's where you become the mother you need to be. That's where you become that powerful lioness, mama bear, who's like going to be able to take on the world with her baby, because you've met the bottom, like you've met the hardest part in the labor process.
Yeah, really feeling like I cannot do any more, but then doing more, that's very powerful. Someone said with that moment that they thought they see it as maybe in evolution, maybe that's the moment where, because you sometimes, it's also like you kind of many times wake up a bit from that bubble. I really felt that, because for the first time in those 4 hours, I opened my eyes and I was like, okay, I'm here and I'm tired and I need you guys. And this, I don't remember who said it, but she was like, maybe that's meant to be when we call our tribe, saying like, now it's close, I need more support. And I really felt like I got that. It just, everyone just said what I needed to hear, and I felt that they were there and I'm gonna do this. I remember, as I said, I had my fingers on his head and I felt him coming further and further down when he was crowning, and it was at this very end stage. I was in the bubble again. I felt quite calm. I felt more present than I've ever felt in my life. I remember it very clearly. Just focus and just feeling everything that was happening, which was also my wish for this birth, being able to feel what was happening. And I remember enjoying that. I grabbed his little neck and felt his shoulders coming out and then a whole body coming out. And I remember seeing him under the water, looking at him, and I was like, is he... I was never worried about him, though. I felt like he's doing well. I could also feel him moving in me, so I felt he's doing well. But I also saw him, you know, wiggling around, doing his little swim, and I was like, okay, he's fine. And that was a lovely feeling, and that feeling of, you know, him being out. Oh, it's the best feeling. It's so nice. And I looked for the cord, and I was like, okay, no cord. And then picked him up, put him on my shoulder. He didn't cry for a few seconds, but you know, everyone was calm about it. And then
and especially with water births, babies are like so calm, and if you don't do anything, they'll just be like looking around and being so calm.
Yeah, but that was all. I don't know, maybe I just think about it in the other scenario, like what would have happened? Would they, because it wasn't like a long time. I don't think even most hospital midwives would have been stressed, but some maybe would have been, and would have been there rubbing him or touching me. And in that moment, I was so happy that no one was, I really didn't want anyone, even during my birth. I remember with my first birth, I really enjoyed people touching me, and I really like a physical touch usually, but I didn't want it at all during this birth. And I just felt like I just needed to be by myself. And I was really happy that no one tried to, obviously take him away would have been horrible, but even touch him, or we had our moment and I could just take a breath. And I just like kind of tickled his back a bit, and then he gave me a big cry, and everyone in the room cried, and I felt so, so proud. So proud. Never felt prouder. And it was just so cool. It took me that whole day being at home, and then, you know, I've never felt endorphins or ecstatic like I felt that day. I was on a high for so long. I never had the baby blues or any of that kind of, I was waiting for me to feel the dip. It was like I was on a high for so long. And it was, as I said, I'd been visualizing my birth for weeks, and it was just, this was my goal. And that's obviously not the case for everyone, but for me, it was like, can this be true? I really got my dream.
Amazing. Yeah. And isn't this magical? And if you would compare that ecstatic, euphoric feeling you had with your second, with the way you felt after your first, was it different?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I said, the first one, it was fine.
But like, that's the thing, though. It's because of the physiology. And this is what I'm so grateful that you are speaking about your home birth, especially here in Sweden, but just in the world, because this is the thing that people and women need to hear, is that when they do have a undisturbed physiological natural birth, this is what they can experience. This high doesn't happen if you have a medicalized birth, you know. Yeah. If you have an epidural, if you get synthetic oxytocin, it cuts your own production of those hormones, right? And so you need the beta endorphins that are like pumped out because you're feeling the discomfort or the pain or the intensity of the surges, right? The oxytocin, the beta endorphins, the adrenaline you had that create focus, you know, all of this is what's creating this high, this euphoria for days after.
Yeah.
And so many women don't know that they're missing out on this because no one tells them. And I think that we're doing a disservice to women. They need to do an informed consent when it comes to, you know, saying yes to some things, right? And they don't know what they're saying no to, because the epidural is just presented as a great option. You don't have to feel the pain, but it has no side effects. But this is a massive side effect, actually.
Yeah. Also, I get quite frustrated when I hear people saying, but it has no side effects. That's like, that should be really put your alarm clock on, because I mean, everything has pros and cons. If someone says that something doesn't have a side effect, that's just a lie. I mean, everything has pros and cons. So, and we have the right to know about those. And sometimes you feel like the pros that way. Sometimes yes. You feel the other way, but you have the right to really make an informed decision. But it's obviously easier if you can get your information before you're in the birthing process, because then you would also know that maybe you could say, I would have said, or actually did I think I asked for my epidural, but if I were to ever give birth at hospital again, I would say that no one offered me an epidural, because then I'm probably going to say yes as well, because I'm in a very vulnerable state. But if no one mentions it, I will have a big opportunity not to.
And if they, instead of when you get into the phase where you might get in transition and have the crisis of confidence, instead of, you know, offering pain relief in form of medication, step in and be continuous support.
Yeah.
Like loving that woman, supporting that woman, touching, acupressure, warmth, bath, shower, all these other pain relieving natural ways of supporting a woman through.
Because that's a big problem, obviously, that with, for one, the time constraints, having lots of women giving birth at the same time that you're supposed to take care of. I mean, it's difficult. And so many ways. I don't know if I could manage it. And I think an epidural will obviously make it easier, at least short term, because then it's like, okay, epidural, they can just go to bed. You don't need to be there in this, because you need to be able to be there, not just be there physically, but also be present. And that's a hard thing due to many circumstances at the hospitals in Sweden anyway.
Yeah, no, also it's midwives around the world.
Being that intensity and giving you know, all the things that you were saying.
Yeah.
Just offer an epidural.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But also you can, with the epidural, you can really, that's also the point of it, I guess, that you're supposed to get out of that bubble somehow. But it's quite, you can really, people often describe it as I kind of woke up and I could understand what was happening around me all of a sudden. And maybe that can be seen as a positive feeling, but it's, as you said, then you don't that's you getting out of all the benefits of being in that very intense bubble.
That's it. You're getting out of liminality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so that definitely was a new experience for me with my first birth. I more so felt like, oh, it's over. And I managed, kind of. And I also took some time to bond with my first son. It didn't stress me out. I knew that it could take some time. But I felt like with my second son, but that was also probably due to me having a child, like me having being a mother already and having bonded with my first son. And I felt like my heart was already open to receive another one. But I think also his birth helped me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That the physiology is primed for us to bond.
Yeah.
That's the thing. If we interrupt the birth process, we also interrupt actually the postpartum and that bonding. We do. And I wonder, you know, because, you know, we're taught as midwives, both of us, you know, being midwives, that taught that bonding can sometimes take some time for women. And that's normal. But I'm like, is it though?
Yeah.
Or is it a side product that,
I mean,
because of the medicalization, you know? Yeah. But because of the medicalization, and that's the normal birth, and because that's normal, then also that bonding takes time is normal. I'm not saying that, yes, for some it is that true, but to the extent that women feel it today, I wonder if that's just a side product to actually the medicalization of most births that we see today.
I'm sure that that's will have an effect. Of course, it will.
Yeah.
I think so as well with the feeling down and the baby blues, of obviously you can feel that as well even if you have a home birth. I remember my sister, she felt quite a lot of that with her after her home birth. I feel like my experience is that more so with women had a home birth, they don't feel that as much with the baby blues feeling, you know.
Yeah. Very, and it's not extended, it's maybe for that third day, fourth day with the massive transition, you know, and the milk coming in, but then it eases up after a day or two compared to some who go for weeks or maybe even months, you know, feeling.
Yeah. And also it would have been so interesting to see for my son as well, my first child, how if he had had another type of birth that was easier for him, because I can imagine that was a really hard birth for him. It was long and it was just, yeah, I can imagine it was tough. I broke my tailbone in the end, pushing him out, and he had a big head, and it, you know, it was totally, I felt like he had a hard time. It was long for him. I mean, me trying to force him out with all the sweeps and everything. Mm-hmm. And if he had had another type of birth, maybe he would have been a bit more content of a child.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, because he was quite, you know, the sad and worried one.
Well, you know, we all have a birth imprint. Our birth informs us both as mothers, like the way we birth our children, what kind of mother we need to be for them, if they show us that throughout their birth. But if it's us maybe initiating their birth, then we're also kind of giving them their birth imprint. Yeah. Interesting thought. So, Asabia, if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Good question. Can I say, it doesn't have to be just one thing, does it?
No, it can be 100.
But first off, informing oneself before you give birth, not thinking that. I'm all about in one way going with the flow, like just trusting and releasing, but I don't really believe in just going with the flow in the sense of just leaving the responsibility to anyone else. This is your responsibility, especially if you're going to give birth in a hospital setting. You need to be informed. Not like you have to know. It's maybe it's too much to ask, having to know everything, you know, all the medications, everything like that, but just knowing a bit about the system and mainly about your rights, what you have the right to say yes and no to, basically.
Which is everything. Which is everything. Yeah, exactly.
you can't demand anything, but you can say no to everything. And a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't know that. And it's everything. Mm. You have the right to your body even when you're giving birth, which should be obvious, but it's not obvious to many people. And also, especially if you're giving birth in hospital, I would recommend getting your own team. Yeah, maybe someone else, not only partner, just having your support system that are prepared to help speak for you and also help just support you. That will take you a long way. But also really imprinting that you are not a statistic or a number or, you know, you are flesh and blood and you're your own unique person. And the strongest thing that you have is your intuition, really. And we have to practice listening to that intuition. That I would wish that for so many women.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That would be my main things, intuition. Mm. And also in the end of pregnancy, and I'm going to listen to this myself, I will try to close off the outside world and preparing in that way to, I mean, nothing is for everybody, but consider maybe stopping with the social media, just focusing on yourself, just to be able to hear that intuition as well, because there's a lot of opinions, people's energies, you take them all in, be very selective with what energies you take in, especially in the end of pregnancy, I'd say.
Yeah. Beautiful. Could not agree more. Love that advice. Thank you so much for sharing your birth stories and good luck with this third Baba on the way. Maybe we'll have you back sharing your third birth story when you've done that.
So exciting to do it all again.
Yes. Can't wait to hear all about it. And I'm guessing you'll soon be turning inward then, maybe in a month or two.
Yeah. On November 1st.
Okay. I love that. On November 1st, you can no longer reach. Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your birth story. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.